All right, welcome to a special episode of The Punt. We've just gone through Singleton. Will here has got his coffee. He's a little bit addicted to coffee, we've found out on this trip.
Yes.
And we're on our way to Yarraman Park Stud, where we're going to unpack the story of I Am Invincible, probably the preeminent sire in Australia at the moment. Incredible story, a $500,000 investment from Yarraman Park about 15 years ago has turned into a couple hundred million dollars of revenue over the last sort of decade or so. We've organised some time out at Yarraman. We're going to talk with Arthur Mitchell and have a really good look around Yarraman Park. I'm Invincible, of course. Sired horses like Imperatriz, Home Affairs, Brazen Bow. The list could go on forever. And all this has been organised by Will, who's sitting next to me from Will Johnson Bloodstock. Mate, thanks for coming on the drive.
Rich, thanks for driving me.
Yeah, and mate, just quickly, you're only ever as good as your last win, and your last win was a pretty good one on Saturday.
Yes.
Coco Jambu,
I don't know if the boys at Wolfden were on, but I was a bit too shy to give you the tip on Friday when we organised this
trip. It was only
trip.
30 or 40 to 1.
It was only 40 to 1 in the bookies ring 5 minutes before the race.
So, wow.
She won well.
But you're a Bloodstock agent. And just quickly tell us, Coco Jambu, she had her first start in Australia on Saturday at Hawkesbury. How did she end up in Australia, and what was your involvement in getting her to win at her first start?
Yeah, so as a Bloodstock agent, I'm tasked with trying to identify horses, particularly overseas, to come and race in Australia. And for the last couple of years, I've been buying horses for Peter and Paul Snowden.
Yep.
So Coco Jambu was sold at the mayor's sale in December in England, and she had, I think, 13 starts, a couple of wins, but a progressive profile whereby she sort of started the season rated in the mid-70s and sort of ended up in the mid-90s. So continued to improve.
Mm-hmm.
And trained by Marco Boddy, who I knew from living in Newmarket for a couple of years. He's a really good trainer, and he recommended her being able to acclimatise to Australian conditions. And Peter and Paul did a great job. Her last start in England, she ran fourth in a stakes race.
Okay.
So we thought she was capable of that sort of level here.
Yeah.
And she trialled well, had been galloping well, and, you know, unbeknownst to us, she was, you know, quite impressive on the line. And
yes.
So she's held her residual value, and so she's now worth as much, if not more, than what we paid for her in England.
Yeah.
And she's heading towards the Tats Tiara in a couple of, you know, in about 6 to 8 weeks' time. So exciting to have such a filly winning on debut in Australia and flying the flag.
And that's what your job's all about, right? Trying to buy low and then sell high, or get high results for your clients.
Yes. Yeah.
And you said something interesting before when I was talking to you, that they trained Coco Jambu a little bit differently over in England, and that's something that you like to sort of zero in on and buy them, because you can get them to stretch out more and become better sprinters, or you can't, but the Snowdens can. Part of why, yeah, you think Coco Jambu came out and had that incredible result for you guys on Saturday.
Yeah, so the way they train them in England is very different to thinking of Randwick or Rose Hill, where you're on a 2,000 metre round track on the flat. Warren Hill in Newmarket, where Marco Boddy trains, every second day they're going up a 900 metre canter that rises 45 metres above sea level over that 900. So they're constantly on an incline, and if you think of the way that Usain Bolt would be training, I doubt he's sprinting up hills. You know, mm-hmm. Probably Mo Farah is training for the 15 kilometres, sure, is running over hills, whereas you bring them a filly like Coco Jambu, who's been probably stretched a little bit in her work,
yeah,
to someone like Peter and Paul, who really execute speed in their workouts, shorter, sharper, 600 metre workouts in quick time on a flat surface, really puts that speed into their legs. So not many people would try and identify a 7 furlong horse from Europe to run here,
mm-hmm,
because by and large we're known as having the best sprinters. But I thought there's an angle to actually target those horses that have probably been trained not to their fullest potential to run over 1,200 metres. And obviously the Snowdons executed that perfectly on Saturday.
Yeah, brilliant. And so this vlog where we're going to go and have a good tour of Yarraman Park, and then we're going to finish it by going to the chairman's sale at Inglis on Thursday night. Can you just quickly tell everyone what the chairman's sale is and why it's a pretty significant night on the bloodstock calendar each year?
Yeah, so Inglis, who have just hosted the Easter yearling sale, and you saw Rich seeing Winks and the filly selling for 10 million. So a month later, we have the breeding stock sales. And this is the most select sale for mares Inglis hold in the year. So there'll be 90 horses, 90 mares, and fillies in training and out of training being sold. So it's sort of the creme de la creme of the top echelons of the Australian brood mare market. Mm-hmm. So we've got Extreme, She's Extreme being sold. So multiple Group 1 winner who obviously fetch a massive price tag. So we'll be able to see that.
Yeah, and Tutor La Vida as well.
Yeah, Tutor La Vida, you know, last start placing in a Group 1 with massive racing upside.
Yep.
So a mare, once they've won a Group 1, obviously holds a significant value, but if they're looking like they can win a Group 1, then people are willing to spend a premium for them.
Yeah. And what do you think She's Extreme might go through the ring for?
I'd say definitely over 3 million.
Wow.
And then anything over that is probably, cream on top of the cake.
You have a personal connection to Yarraman because Arthur Mitchell, who we're going to chat with, is your father-in-law.
Father-in-law, yes. Yeah.
So that's a good in for us to to get in there to have a look at Vinny. And there's also Hellbent and Brave Smash as well.
Yeah, all three stallions have had an awesome season. I'm Invincible just broke the record for the most amount of prize money.
30 million, right?
30 million.
Getting close to 30.
Hellbent, side Magic Time,
yes,
who won the other week on that heavy
all
track.
All age.
And Brave Smash, Brave Me, and Komochi, who's actually being sold in the chairman sale as well as a racing prospect. So all three stallions have been going well. And, you know, it's good to have a father-in-law that likes horse racing and the punt, and here we are.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And over the back, he's trying to hide away, but Uncle Mal, everyone's favourite cameraman, is over there in the back. Can you give us a wave, Uncle Mal? All right, next stop, Yarraman Park. We'll see you there.
I let my tape rock till my tape pop. Smoking weed and bamboo, sipping on private stock. Way back when I had the red and black lumberjack with the hat to match. Remember rapping Duke, the hard. You never thought that hip hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight cause I rhyme tight. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade. Born sinner, the opposite of a winner. I'm the one I used to eat some.
So we're in with the weanlings. So these are roughly have been born from September, October time of last year. And they were on their mothers until about 2 months ago. So they're in with a nanny who's a retired mare. And she'll look after these weanlings, a group of fillies. So this filly here is by a staying side. So King,
this one just here? Or?
Yeah, this one Arthur's with. Uh-huh. So we'll just give a special mention to Kingsley, who could have been in staying side.
He could have had a share in that filly.
Yeah.
Is this staying side Notting Hill?
Out of Notting Hill.
Yeah.
So her half-sister by I'm Invincible sold for 1.8 million at the Easter sale on the first day.
Here's the Vinnie filly out of Notting Hill. She's a queen, she's a star, she's the type of filly you come to Easter to buy. And you start me away here, what's a filly like that worth? 1 million for the Queen Notting Hill. 1.1. 1.2. 1.3. 1.5. 6. 7. 8. At 1.8 million, she goes forever. All done last time. Jimmy Price out the front for 1.8 million.
Yeah, she's an exciting horse. She was obviously clearly magnificent. You wouldn't get a better type by the champion sire with a massive pedigree backing her up. She was sensational from the day she was born, and it's shown in the sale ring, selling to Nick Joaquim with multiple underbidders. We could hardly keep up with the action, so it was really exciting.
Star, best filly I've seen for a long time, as a matter of fact. best filly on ground, probably the best filly I've seen, one of the best two fillies I've seen ever. So, right family, right cross, and we were quite keen to get her, but as you said, always a little bit more than we'd like to spend, but she's a lovely filly and we're very happy with the purchase. It was tense, but I can tell you, when I'm 1-1, no one can take me off it.
Yeah. So this filly will go to sale next year, so from more likely than not, Magic Millions in January, if not Easter of next year. So she's by first season sire, you know, staying sire, who'll have his first yearling sell from January. And she's a lovely physical, much like her half-sister, different style, a bit lower to the ground, and probably looks like her dad, you know, yep. Fast two-year-old.
But you can already tell that she's looking quite athletic. And
yeah, yeah, so... you know, Arthur and his team are assessing the weanlings daily, and then this is owned by a client called Craig Burnick, who lives in America, so I'll come up here and look at her every sort of 6 weeks and just assess her progress.
Yeah.
But from this early stage, you get a guide as to their quality and what they might grow into.
Yeah.
So she's well built, you know, plenty of muscle. And big thing for fast horses here is like a big hip, hip and hindquarter, which she's got. And obviously she's got a lovely attitude.
Could she possibly go to seven figures, or is that a bit out of reach for a
first season? It's very rare that a first season sire will have one make seven figures.
Yep.
But you never know, you know, her sister nearly made $2 million.
So, yes.
Whatever she makes, I'm sure will be, you know, a good sales price next year for a stay inside.
Yeah.
This is the first foal of a mare called Impecunious, who's Group 1 placed. This is owned by, this is an Arm Invincible first foal of the mare.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a beautiful filly, probably go to Easter.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually owned a bit partly by Aussie Keir, us, Bray Sikorsky and that lot. So
okay.
She was a very good race mare. This is the first foal, so hugely promising start for a mare that can have a first foal that looks like this.
Yeah.
So this is your typical Arm Invincible filly.
Okay.
Big bum, good-natured, and equality. It's a ripping first foal.
And so you'd like to think that she'd, you know,
probably if we sell her, she'd go to Easter.
Yeah,
and she's that good.
She'd
or
do
Magic's
well.
Or Easter, she could go to either.
Yeah.
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 Obviously, Easter we themed. We've got to have the real elite ones.
Yes.
Maybe because Magic Millions is the first bite of the cherry. We're all keen to get there, and there's a bigger buying bench. The syndicates are active. Easter, it started to get a bit tougher, so you've got to have a very nice horse.
Yeah.
It's been that way for a long while.
Yes. Yeah. So as you can see, we've made it to Yarraman Park, and we're here with Arthur Mitchell. Real privilege to be here. Thank you very much for giving us some of your time.
No, you're welcome.
Yeah, so I thought you might just sort of roll around your beautiful property and just tell us a bit about it. I mean, the starting point would be that George Moore, one of the most famous jockeys Australia's ever produced, bought this property. Was it back in the 60s?
George bought it, I think, in the early 60s. And my father travelled out here with a well-known bloodstock agent at the time called George Blackwell, who actually bought Wilkes for the Kelly family. Very famous bloodstock agent. And he travelled with him a bit and came and stayed here one weekend after the race with George Moore and liked it and said to George, George, if you ever want to sell it, give me first refusal.
Yeah.
Next year he got a letter and he bought it, and we sold up in England and came out here. I think I was the eldest at 13, Billy was 12 and Harry was 8.
And your father loved the property that loved it so much that he was willing to move from England to here.
And I think England was about to go into a fairly big depression. You know, England in the early 70s was getting pretty ordinary, and I think he saw an opportunity to get out of England and give a fresh start for the three boys. And to be fair, he was pretty right.
Yeah.
Pretty right.
And so this became home then for you?
So this became home, still is. This is where we came to. I live in the house that we were brought up in, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yep. And so your father was known as Major Mitchell.
He was
and
known
what
as
was
Major.
And what was his approach when he got here to try and get the farm going and paying for itself?
Sort of, because my father had been through the war and that, he sort of ran it on a non-commercial scale. Although we stood stallions and had mares, it wasn't really a... you know, pushed, none of the farms were really in those days. I mean, it was a very different era.
Yeah.
Small staff, you know, three or four people working here, run very differently to how they run today. So he sort of puddled along doing that, and he had cattle and sheep and that sort of thing, and just sort of did his best, bought a few stallions and a few mares. And it probably was when Dad sort of retired, I mean, not long after my mother died, she was only quite young, that my brother Harry and I took it over and started to, it was pretty run down, and we started to develop it and try to make money and buy more mares and deal a bit in stallions. And
so what years was this? Is this the 80s or the 90s? Or?
This is the mid 80s, I suppose.
Okay.
Mid 80s.
And so you're a young man back then, and did you, growing up on this property, did you know that you were always going to get into bloodstock and racing?
I suppose in England we'd always ridden, and Dad actually owned racehorses and that sort of thing, but we, no, it was only really that we came here that we got into the breeding side. And then when we left school, we all travelled and worked around the world. I worked in, you know, various countries on the stud side. My brother Bill, he worked for more horse trainers in England and America and became quite a successful, or very successful trainer.
Very successful,
and
yeah.
Then, you know, and my brother Harry, he worked around, did some racing stables and some, you know, and also, you know, he worked on studs as well. So it sort of grew into that. And then we came back and we started to, you know, re-fence, tidy the place up, commercialise it a bit, and sort of just kept it going from there. So when we then took over there, we actually, luckily, a farm came up at the back of us for sale, and we were lucky enough to buy for a reasonable price. A whole lot of the back country runs back to the hills and along the hills, so we picked up another 1,500 acres, which gave us a bit more land.
Yes.
And then since then, and just in the last 5 years, we've bought a Tunga stud, which was right next door.
Okay.
So that's another sort of addition to the farm, gives us a bit of room to spread out.
Yes. And so why did you want to acquire the land of a Tunga stud? Is it so you can
sell
more mares? And
it's just another investment that we knew how to manage. And also, I mean, as you'll see, actually we'll go down there now, I mean, you'll see that we basically had to cut a hole in the fence and we were there. So all our machinery can, you know, do all the work we needed to do.
And do you run any other livestock, cattle or sheep or anything?
Cattle.
Yeah?
Yep.
Who gets more attention, the cows or the horses?
Well, the horses by a long way. The cows come a very poor second. But they're much easier to look after too.
Yeah.
So it's not like horses have to be checked, you know, checked and fed in the morning and then checked carefully again in the afternoon. So it's not a sort of job you can ever take an afternoon off. Someone has to be checking the horses. So, and, you know, it's quite intense for the staff.
And that's one of your roles. You're out with your horses every morning, feeding them, is that right?
Yeah,
6 a.m. you get up and you go out.
I feed the weanlings in the morning, and which I enjoy a lot. And then in the season, I pretty much go out and I feed the mares and foals are in paddocks like these. These will be full of mares and foals, and feed them, check them, because, you know, their thoroughbreds are very fragile, so they're prone to injuries and sickness more than sort of stock horses. So there's always something that's lame or it's sick or it's got a bit of something. You're always got to be, you know, you've got to have a bit of knowledge to understand, you know, how they are, and you've got to be attention to detail. It's quite big.
So what would you say was the turning point for you guys that made you able to be able to sort of compete at the elite level in bloodstock? What was the horse that probably changed things for you?
It was probably that yearling sale in, when did we say that was? 2006, and we sold the three highest price lots. It probably showed to us and the world that we could actually deliver a premium product at the top end of the market. And I think that was noticed around the world. You know, we have a lot of clients here now from overseas, from England and America and, you know, Hong Kong. We have a lot of clients that I think, as we've built up our name and our reputation and, you know, as I like to say, you know, we're pretty, you know, as honest as we can be and as transparent as we can be with people. So I think that was a big turning point.
We're talking about that 2006 yearling sale. So Ocean Fast, I remember Ocean Fast because it was the dam of a Lingi.
Yep.
And Lingi is one of the fastest fillies we've ever seen. And you did what?
Well, we were offered her by Damon Gabbardy, prominent agent in Victoria. And we knew that a Lingi went okay. We knew that she was fast. That's all we knew. So at the time, I think she cost about $100,000, the mare.
Yeah.
And so we bought her, had a foal by something not overly exciting.
King Charlemagne, maybe.
I think it was. Charlemagne made about $70,000. And then we bred her back to Encosta del Lago. And that was the filly that made the money, yeah.
And then at the time, a Lingi came out and won everything. Her arch enemy was Fastnet Rock, wasn't it? They were taking each other on.
Yeah, well, because he beat her in the Lightning and then she beat him in the Newmarket.
Yeah.
She was a very good mare.
Yeah.
Very
and
good
so
mare.
At the time, that sort of, I've read in, you know, and heard in other podcasts, did that help you guys sort of pay down debt that you had on the farm?
Yeah, I think it sort of that year paid off the land over there. We rebuilt Harry's house. I mean, yeah, it gave us, it freed up debt. It freed up what debt we had, yeah. And then we could sort of, we've never been, you know, overly aggressive. We've always tried to run it as tidily as we can without, you know, going, we never really played that go and buy the slipper winner for $40 million or something. Yes. You know, we've never really been in that game, rightly or wrongly, I don't know. So we have obviously been very lucky that we chose I'm Invincible, and obviously he's repaid us.
Yeah.
We can, I mean, we should be building a statue for him. I mean, he's been incredible, not just for us, for our partners in the horse.
Yeah, so let's go back. So I'm Invincible. So the Goodwood is on this weekend, which is timely because probably one of his best runs. He was an on-pace horse, I'm Invincible.
Yep.
And if you watch the footage of the old Goodwood, he's leading pretty well, and then the old Champ Takeover Tiger just slowly reels him in.
250 metres left to go. It's I Am Invincible, two in front of Takeover Target. He's under pressure at the moment. Then Augusta Proud, I Am Invincible, two in front. Takeover Target after him now from Augusta Proud. Flying Phoenix, I Am Invincible in front. Takeover Target went up on the outside. Eight Group 1 wins, $6 million. A true champion. Takeover Target takes the Goodwood by three quarters. I Am Invincible second, third Commanding Hope.
Then, and he was a champion Takeover Target. He was a genuine champion.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah.
And so do you remember watching I Am Invincible in the Goodwood?
I do, yeah, I do. I do, because we, funny enough, we followed him from the early days when Toby Edmonds trained him in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And he was early favourite for the Golden Slipper after his first start. So we knew, and then we found out he'd had trouble. So we'd sort of followed his career a bit. And I also follow overseas racing, so I knew a bit about Invincible Spirit was starting to do well, although he, you know, hadn't had a lot of chance here, but I knew he was starting to go up the SARS list in Europe. And funny enough, a chap called Andrew Reichardt, who owns Blue Bloods magazine, he said to me, you know, you should consider, you know, him as a stallion prospect. Mm-hmm. It sort of pricked my interest. And
were you actively looking for a stallion prospect, or were you just sort of indifferent to it if something at the right price came along, or were you really going hard for one?
Bit of both, I'd say. The right sort of horse came along. I mean, we've had picked a few pretty bad ones, so we wanted to try to get it right. So the main thing is he had to be good looking. So we sat down, I think it was in Sydney, at a classic sale, and chatted to the owners, who were, you know, were great racing people.
He was
a boogie, the Gauls, you know, really, really good people. And we arranged the deal subject to our inspection. Mm-hmm. So we jumped on a plane. Billy was living in Melbourne at the time. We jumped on a plane and went down, and the rule we had, which is common knowledge now, was he just had to come out of the box. We had to like him straight away.
Yeah.
Because we knew he wasn't going to attract. His racehorse performance wasn't going to really set the world on fire as a stallion. But he walked out of the box, this beautiful horse, and we just looked at each other and said, we've got to give this horse a chance.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the first few years, we weren't getting particularly good mares, but people who saw him, you know, they wanted to breed to him. So he wasn't covering particularly good mares, a few of ours, but not a lot. Although Brazen Bow came out of a lesser mare, and certainly he he was the turning point to his career. That's when we knew, that's when we knew we were going all right. And then the day we were down there in Melbourne and we, in the Coolmore, and we weren't really expecting him to win. And then he won like that. It's like, whoa, we think we've got a pretty good stallion here now.
Yeah. And so, because you, I mean, one of the deals of the century in terms of bloodstock, so yeah, a deal was done at about $1 million, right? You guys took half share, and the Gauls had a half share.
Yeah. And we still own half the horse, and they own half the horse.
Yeah, which is interesting, because I was chatting with Will on the way up, and he was saying in today's bloodstock world, these stallions go to stud, like, you know, Storm Boy will go to stud eventually, and he'll be chopped up in all different shares, and there's all these... this person gets a nomination, this person, it's all, whereas you guys are just straight down the middle, and it's, you know, for over a decade now, that's just how it's been. And
well, it wasn't that expensive. I mean, if you go and spend 20, 25 million on a horse, you probably have to spread the risk.
Yes.
But as you said, it was around $1 million. So at the time, we could take the risk, and we decided we'd take the risk, and we, you know, keep the numbers up, sell him on his looks. And everyone who came and saw him said, this is the best looking horse in the valley.
You did a deal with people, if they bought 3 years worth of nominations to him, they get a lifetime.
There were 13 sold.
Yeah.
Mainly to small breeders, and yeah, life changing for a lot of them.
And so, how did the deal work? If you
bred to him for 3 years,
and you had to pay $10,000 a year,
you so got lifetime.
You put up $30,000.
You got a lifetime breeding.
Right? And those people are still getting services to him now.
I think there's two left, the original ones, and I think one of them's actually going to sell. So there'll actually be one left from the start.
Yeah.
Most of them have morphed into the bigger breeder. He had his first sort of runner, was a winner in New Zealand, and it just sort of grew from there. And you know, he was leading first season sire. To be honest, when we first got him for stud, we thought if we could get this horse to a nice $25,000 horse, we'd all make a nice quid.
Yep.
That was our dream.
Yep.
And he's obviously taken it to another level. But he started like that, got a few stakes winners, things were looking good. I think his fee then went up to $25,000. Along came Brazen Bow, we went up to $50,000, and we were getting swamped with bookings.
Yes.
So he's just sort of creeped his way up from there, really, and kept delivering.
And is it hard when you've got to get up to those elite fees of in the 200,000s and even up to 300,000? Is that a difficult decision to make because you worry that you're going to push it too far and
definitely
turn off demand?
Definitely. Definitely is. Exactly it is. And I mean, yeah, you don't want to, you want to try to be a bit fair. Then again, you're getting so many people trying to get to it. It's supply and demand a bit. So I mean, last year he stood at 275 plus GST. I think this year we brought him back 25. Just think that the market this year is getting a little bit trickier. Mm-hmm. Economy's not as good. You know, we could have kept squeezing the lemon. We'll still restrict his book. He's going to cover a full book again comfortably. Yeah. I don't think we've done the wrong thing. I think it was, you know, we discussed it. We didn't need to do it, but we thought we would. So we're actually the same now, I think, as Zoostar and Extreme Absolutely. Choice. I think he's sub-fertile, so he doesn't get many mares in foal, but Zoostar and here, although we are $10 million in front at the moment, Zoostar's having a very good season. So, you know, we're very aware of that.
And let's talk about a couple of the superstars that Vinny's had. So best pace to start is Imperatriz. I bet you enjoyed watching her.
Yeah, well, she was amazing. We used to own the grandmother. We owned the grandmother when John O'Shea was training for Dali. He liked the mother of Berimbo. So we thought, so he just said to us, he's a bit of a friend of ours. And we asked him, he said, yeah, I think this filly can win black type.
Yeah.
So we bought the mother, Percussive. We actually bred a stakes winner out of her by Vinny, which is quite a nice mare. We bought her off Dali. Berimbo didn't really go on and do what we hoped. He got placed in a Mooney Valley Oaks or something, I think, or one of those sort of races. Anyway, she ended up coming to Vinny, and that was Imperatriz.
Mm.
So I think maybe that she was by Charmadel was probably the, might have been the crux of the, but I think she's been the most, you know, she's been a wonderful mare.
Yeah.
Wonderful mare. I mean, well, she won more Group 1s last year than any horse in the world. I mean, it's pretty good effort.
Yeah, so did you get a real kick out of when she was racing? Day coming, you're like, oh, Imperatriz running down.
Yeah, very much. We watch them all pretty much.
Yeah.
We watch them all. We've watched them all from day one. So we certainly do get a kick out of it. Yeah, we really do.
In Secret, she's probably about a length off Imperatriz, but she's pretty good.
Superstar. She was fabulous. I mean, Libertini that Jerry had was very, very good. You know, he's had a lot of very good horses. And I think the interesting thing on him too is I think he's already showing his wares as a sire of sires because... Well, Tassort, who started well, is a grandson. I mean, Brazen Bow probably has, you know, I think he would have been a very good stallion if he didn't have fertility issues. And I think then coming along, we've got Home Affairs.
Yeah.
And from what we've seen here of our foals, Home Affairs will be a huge chance at stud. They're very good looking, they're very good natured, strong horses. I would think he's a huge chance to make a very good stallion.
Yeah. And so, Vinny's getting pretty old. What is he, 19 now?
19.
And where does that sit in terms of being a stallion? When do you sort of, what's the life expectancy of a stallion, not in terms of them actually staying alive, but that they can continue to do their job as a stallion?
It's hard to tell. I think his father was still covering at 26, Invincible Spirit, but if he stays healthy in that, I'd like to think we'd have another 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Probably, and then he might have to have his numbers bought back a bit more, but at the moment he's comfortable covering 140 odd mares, and it seems to work within his capabilities, and he enjoys it. So we don't over push him, but that's hopefully we've got another 3 or 4 years.
Is he fully booked this year?
It's pretty much. There's a few left, but not many. He's pretty much. He's really a horse now that bigger breeders with the best mares use. You know, you can't, he's basically, you know, he's obviously he's expensive, so you've got to own pretty good mares to breed to him.
Yeah.
So he really attracts the sort of the top end of the top end of the market.
And are you guys looking for the next I Am Invincible?
We are always looking, yes, yeah. We are looking, yep, we are.
And once again, do you not play at the silly end, the really big money? Is it, your approach would be the same, trying to find that undervalued horse and turn it into another Vinny?
That would be the plan, but that's not easy. But we'd probably be prepared to put, you know, we've got quite a lot of solid people behind us, so we could probably have a fairly serious go at a horse if we wanted to. So we could, you know, certainly play up a bit more than we have in the past.
Yeah.
And we've now got a better broodmare band behind us. You know, we've got 60 or 70 odd mares. You know, most of them pretty decent mares. We're always buying young mares and selling a few older mares, so we're always trying to buy younger mares in to bolster our broodmare band. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not easy. It hasn't been easy the last few years. We've had Yulong, which have been, you know, really made it very hard to buy sort of the mares we'd like to normally buy. So
because they don't get beat, do they?
They don't get beat very often. No. So we ran into them a lot trying to buy mares, which has been tricky. But we'll see what happens this year.
And so the chairman's sale that's on Thursday night, Will's going to take us and give us a bit of a tour and show us what goes on there. Will you attend the chairman's sale?
Yep.
Yeah, you'll be down there?
I'll go down to the chairman's sale, yep.
And do you think you guys will be active?
I don't think we'll be that active, no. We won't be buying those sort of multiple Group 1 winners, but we'll be looking at, I think we're looking at probably, you know, 10 or 12 mares.
Yep.
We bought there last year, we bought that good race filly, Scorched Earth. Mm-hmm. And she's in photo arm Invincible. We bought her, I think she cost $500,000. We were quite happy with the price.
Yep.
And she's looking good.
And what do you think about the issues that racing faces, in particular like animal welfare?
It's the elephant in the room, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think, I know, for instance, here we're trying our best. We sponsor thoroughbred events and show jumping, and we're very much, you know, it's become a major thing, and we're obviously very supportive of it, and it's a very tricky scenario for all concerned.
Yeah, my feeling is that as an industry we're doing really well with it, and it's almost at the point now where we don't have to continually pander to the people who don't care for the industry and want to keep pushing back against us.
I hope
they're
right.
They're very entitled to their opinion, protest all you want, but they need to stay in their lane and we'll stay in ours, and because I think as an industry we're doing everything we can to look after the horses as well as we can.
They're looked after better than anything. I mean, they're loved and nurtured and cared for, and any form of injury, the vets, I mean, they're absolutely pampered.
Yep.
And obviously after racing, you know, it's trying to find them a new career is
and a happy life.
And you can only try, some of them don't want to respond, but on the whole, yeah, you want to give them a happy life.
Yeah. So here's Vinny. How are you, mate? So what are we? It's about, what, midday or 1 o'clock? So when does he get his feed?
We'd have had a little lunchtime snack, I'd say, and then he'd really get... Well, normally he'd be out in his paddock, but because of the rain, we tend not to put him out too much in the wet. So he's actually got a big undercover yard we built for him, so sometimes he goes in there, but he doesn't like it very much.
His Brave Smash.
Hey, mate. Not talking. No. We started to see he was getting runners, and Aquis owned most of him, and I think we must have approached them, or they approached us, about buying a share and bringing him here, because he stood in the Hunter Valley for 1 year, then he stood in Queensland, so... We know we've got to make him, we've got to get through a few quiet seasons, but I think they know they can run.
Yes.
So we can get the better mares, the trainers know they can run. They're getting a lot of winners and they're winning well, so it's promising. I mean,
yeah.
Komochi was a smashing filly, wasn't she?
Yeah, yeah, she goes, you know. We'll see her go through the chairman's sale on Thursday night.
We will, it'll be interesting, won't it?
Yeah. So Hell Bent, sort of on a similar trajectory to his dad, I'm Invincible, you bought him before he got his Group 1, is that right?
Yeah, we bought him as a three-year-old. We bought into him then from Alan Cardy, chap who sadly died a while ago, raced him. Kurt Goldman trained him. Was a good, he won an English banner race at two. And we bought him, and you know, obviously kept him in training. We were a bit unlucky in a few group ones, and then we won the William Reid, which you know, sort of got us a good start at stud.
Makes all the difference.
He's not quite as charming as his dad.
As his dad, he was probably jealous. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's always.
Hello, buddy.
He lives in his dad's shadow a bit, doesn't he? People come here. Oh, well, where's I'm invisible?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty rare to ever do what his dad's done, but he's certainly proving his worth. He's had, you know, he's got some pretty good horses out there. He's of his age group. He's well in front of on his age group in prize money. So for third season sire, he's right up there. I think he's running 12th on the Australian sires list, which there's a lot of pretty good horses behind him.
And so
he's holding his own.
He'll have Benedetta in the Goodwood on Saturday.
Benedetta in the Goodwood, yeah.
It's Arkansas Kid from I Am Me. Arkansas Kid, a neck on I Am Me. Climbing Star Benedetta joining in. Oscar's Fortune and Stretton Angel the widest out. Benedetta strikes the lead. Stretton Angel's after her. Benedetta! Jamie Carr gets another group one in South Australia. It's gold for Benedetta.
She's a horse with so much talent, and she's just had things not go her way, and today it was just lined out perfectly for us.
Just wanted to get the job done for the horse, and she's been so gallant and in defeat in good races, and just to get that group one under her belt is it's a big relief, and we'll head north now and head toward the Stradbroke.
And how does the future look for Yarraman? There's that famous Hayes saying that, you know, the future belongs to those who plan for it. Are you?
We're trying to plan for it. We have, I've got two daughters. One works here with me. She's a chartered accountant. She's come back to the farm. Lucy, my other daughter, is married to Will Johnson, and she's a lawyer in Sydney. But then my brother Harry has a 16-year-old son and a 21-year-old daughter. So all quite interested in the industry. It's just a matter of how it plays out. It's a tricky thing, but we're going to try to plan as carefully as we can and try to make it fair for everyone.
Yeah, but so the plan is very much for Yarraman to continue well into the future.
I'd like to think so. Yeah, I'd like to think so. I mean, let's hope the industry stays together, and I think we've got a nice farm. It does pretty well, so hopefully there is a future here for the next generations. Yeah.
You've had a huge amount of success. What are sort of the principles and ideals that you've relied on over your career to get you to where you are now?
I think, you know, we learnt the industry from the bottom up. We're still prepared to jump on if I have to, I'm happy to jump in and do the basic things with the staff, you know, picking up the shit and stuff like that still doesn't faze me. We can still do anything the staff can do.
Mm-hmm.
We are big in nurturing our staff. We try to attract, we get a lot of young people from overseas that want to learn. So we've got a very good reputation from the Irish National Stud. So we have three or four last year students. We try to nurture them and teach them and send them on to better things.
Mm.
We have we'd like to think we've got a good reputation for being honest. Maybe sometimes we're a bit too honest, maybe brutally honest, but we try to. We're not going to tell someone their foal's born that it's a beautiful foal. If it's not, we're liable more inclined to say, look, your foal's not great, it might improve, but at the moment, it's not a particularly nice foal.
Mm.
Some people don't like to hear that.
Mm.
Other people do. They prefer to be told the truth so they know, and we're probably inclined to be a bit more brutally honest than some. Deal with people honestly. Yeah, play what I say, play with a straight bat.
Mm. Thank you very much, mate. A lot of insight. Thank you for taking a large portion of your day out to spend some time with us. Everyone at home will really enjoy it. So,
No, it's good. Well, I hope it's of some interest. Obviously, it's a side of the game that maybe a lot of people don't really know much about. So, if any of your boys are interested, they can always, you know, throw up in the valley, come and have a look, and we're happy to show them around. So, different side of the game, and it's interesting where it all starts and what side of business it is. But an interesting game. You never get bored. There's always something going on, and you're always hoping for something. And
there's always opportunity.
There's always opportunity. There's obviously disappointments too. So you've got to learn to take the disappointments with the good ones, especially with horses. And
we're punters. We know what what losing feels like.
You understand what disappointment is. Yes, I'm a bit the same. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, we might run into you at the chairman's sale, but if not, thank you very much. So we've made it to the chairman's sale, and the first filly we're going to look at is Komochi. She's looking brilliant. So, yeah, tell us a bit about her. I mean, I know a lot about her, but you probably articulate it better than me.
Yeah, so we saw Brave Smash with you on Monday, and here we are on Thursday, night of the chairman's sale. Komochi, who's Brave Smash's best performer on the track thus far, trained by Gary Portelli. She won the Light Fingers, and so she's selling tonight as a racing and breeding proposition.
Yeah.
So whoever buys her tonight can either race her on or send her to the breeding shed this season to be covered.
It's very likely that they'd race her on, wouldn't they?
Seems very likely.
Yeah.
Yeah. We saw her prep this autumn carnival, how well she went. And, you know, she's only three rising four. So I see on Ladbroke, she was $26 for the Golden Eagle.
Yep.
So you could aim her at a race like that. And then physically, lovely deep girth on her. So from the wither to below the shoulder, that's where the heart and lungs are. And she's very well balanced, nice strong hind quarter, quite a pretty head and, you know, lovely demeanor as she stands there pricking her ears.
Mm. And any idea why the owners would want to sell her at this sale when she's probably still got a bit of racing left in her? You think it's a strategic financial decision?
Yeah, she was a very inexpensive weanling. You know, she was only $30,000-$35,000. Mm. So, you know, she could make upwards of $2 million tonight. So it's probably a good opportunity for the owner to explore how much she's worth in the marketplace. And, you know, whether or not he sells her, we'll find out shortly.
What one of the stars of the show at $2.2 million.
Yeah, great result for Leo Cho. You know, Merrick Staunton and Billy Wong found her as a weanling, I think about 26,000 off memory. She's won over $1 million, stakes placed up in multiple Group 1 place getter. Great ride for these guys and a great result for Leo. As I said, he's a big investor in racing now. Got a lot of brood mares, buys a lot of yearlings. He's bought, I think, a few weanlings at this sale so far. So it's good. He needed that, and to have a horse this good so early is a massive thing. He knows exactly what's happened tonight, and yeah, he was quite emotional on the phone. He's a really, really genuine guy. I really like him, and I'm hoping that one of his foals or whatever he produces over the next few years or yearlings he buys can emulate what she's done, because you don't get them very often, these sort of horses at this level.
So you think this might be the sale topper? This VRC Oaks winner?
Yeah. Yes, knocked off Fireburn. Trying to win the two-year-old Triple Crown.
Mm.
So Henry Field, who you know well, Newgate, they're consigning this beautiful mare. You know, she's Group 1 winner at 2 and won the Oaks at 3, which is probably, you know, the perfect broodmare prospect anywhere in the world for a horse to win a Group 1 at 2 and 3.
Okay, so that's
elite, yeah. So she could make upwards of, you know, $3.5-4 million this evening.
Yes.
And she's entitled to.
Yeah.
So she's by Extreme Choice is arguably the best stallion statistically in the country.
Yep.
Standing at Newgate. And yeah, I'm sure she'll set the ring alight this evening.
Looking forward to it. Any idea who you think might win in the end?
Who'll win? My money would be on Coolmore.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Take out Yulong.
Take out Yulong, yeah.
What about our old mate Arthur from Yarraman?
Yarraman? I think he would be on his wish list. Yeah.
She is extreme excellence. She's extreme. She goes for $3.4 million.
Well, you can certainly see why she was such an elite race mare. You have to be pretty special to be able to win the races that she was able to do. She's got great depth of girth, she's all quality, she's very much like her own sire. She looks like she's the type of mare that's going to be able to produce commercial foals, and hopefully she can go on and produce a stallion or a Group 1 winner in the future.
Tutor La Vida went really pushed Orchestral. didn't she?
Yeah, so she ran second to Orchestral in the Vinery Stud Stakes.
Yeah.
And like Komochi, she's being sold as a racing and breeding prospect. So plenty of upside to her. Chris Waller sort of said in the press that, you know, she could win the Queensland Oaks. So you could be looking at an Oaks winner.
Yeah.
So long term, she's got lovely residual value, massive pedigree, and a beautiful type. So she's got it all. The Autumn Sun, he's had 3 Group 1 winners the last 3 Saturdays.
Yeah.
So you've got no hottest stallion in the country right now. So perfect time to be trying to buy her.
She's beautiful, isn't she? Look at that face.
Lovely. Yeah.
Yeah, and she's literally been pulled out of Chris's stable to come here.
Yeah.
To be sold to new owners and then back to the stable and back into training for the Oaks.
Yeah. So she was at track work this morning.
Wow. Yeah, what'd she do this morning?
Nice slow morning. So she had pace work on Tuesday with James. And so since then she's been in and out both days and just slow work back at night.
Yeah, exciting. All right. Thank you very much. Good luck tonight.
Thank you.
Now one of the stars of the night here in Tuta La Vida at 1.4 a bid, at 1.4, at 2 million, 2.4 Gus. 2,700,000, 2.8. 3 million Tuta La Vida. Have a look at her. 3.2. A heavyweight battle with excellence, with elegance. I'd sell Tuta La Vida for 3.2 million.
Great result. Great result for everybody. Obviously, the sale, the Chairman sold. It's a great inception and it's great competition and it brings broodmare owners together early, gets them excited and sets the scene.
No, it's exciting. It's something that we were looking at. We think it's, a good partnership. You know, we met Chris when we were in Australia, and knowing that he's training the horse, and how he feels about the horse was one of the reasons that we decided to buy her. It's just kind of inviting, and we wanted to be a part of it. You know, a race mare with his pedigree and with his accomplishments fits right into our program, because ultimately we're building up breed to race program and we want to do that. You know, it makes sense to, you know, have brood mares in Australia and so that we can produce, you know, our own racehorses, because that's really what we want to do.
Yeah, it looks like she's going to stay in the stable, which is fantastic, and great flag bearer for Resolute Racing.
So mate, we've been all over the state to pull this vlog together. It's come together very well, and we find ourselves in one of the great racing pubs in Sydney, the Royal Oak down in Double Bay. Mm. I presume this is sort of your second home or your second office. Is that
yes,
right?
Yeah. After a Saturday at Randwick, this is the first port of call. So
usually full of plenty of race goers.
Plenty of race goers. Yep. So long as they've watched the Saturday set and had a winner, they're happy. But no, it's good to be here and following on from the Chairman's Sale.
Yeah, so the Chairman's Sale, the 3 horses you looked at, I asked you to try and find the top 3 highest priced ones, and you did very well at that. She's Extreme, went for about what you thought. Komochi, same again.
Yes.
The surprise was Tuta La Vida, sold really well, strongly.
Yeah, massive surprise. So sort of thought she might make around 2 million, but to make 3.2, to go to an American owner who's just starting to dip his toes down here is great.
Mm.
And Chris Waller will train, so we'll see her up in Queensland over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, in the Oaks.
Yeah.
Interesting to watch. I'm really looking forward to that. Mm. And so to wrap things up, so you've started a pretty significant partnership with Annabelle Neeshan. You're going to be buying yearlings for her over the next year or so?
Yeah, so from January we started buying yearlings. So we've got about 20 so far, and we'll start buying some of these tried horses like Coco Jambu, which is really exciting. We saw on Saturday, New Mirian won the Hollandale, knocked off Hewton on the spot.
4 Hollandales for Annabelle, pretty
4
good
in a row. Yeah. So I've changed jersey, so to speak.
Yeah.
So if you want to get in touch, you know, go to my website, wjbloodstock.com, or go to Annabelle's website, and there's a bunch of horses we've bought this year, and hopefully a promising star amongst them.
Yeah, and there's opportunity for people right up at the top of the game, and for people who just do it more as a recreation, just first time owners, all that kind of stuff, everyone can get involved with you guys, can't they?
Yeah, exactly. As we alluded to when we're driving to Scone, it's about buying low and selling high. So our entry point's, you know, around $50,000-$60,000, sort of all the way up to, you know, a significant multiple of that. So it's about getting your friends together, having a good time, good experience, and hopefully in the winner's store.
Unreal, mate. Well, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun. The vlog's come up really well.
Thanks, Rich.
So all the best, mate. We'll be following your success a lot. So
thanks, mate.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.